welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I'd like to say to everybody out there, Happy New Year, because we are approaching that date. And tonight we have a little different show because of that. I'm going to do a live broadcast for a little over the first hour or so on the life of the human soul. I'm going to explain what, from the perspective of the human soul, what life is really like. And then the second hour or so, the broadcast will be last year's January 1st broadcast on a positive spiritual future and how we get there, which that was just a 1 hour. So we're really still having a two-hour show, but one of its parts is going to be an encore, and the other part right now is me live. Here I am. So let me start off by saying that for most of the time when I've described bits and pieces of this whole business of what a human soul is like, I've given a kind of a shorter version of what I'm going to be explaining tonight. I don't think I've ever really, in a total composite way, put it all together. And even if I have, and maybe I've forgotten it, this will probably be fresh because it's coming straight out of my head, of course, and if I had said the same things over again, I would be surprised. Because my approach has changed. I go from different angles so that people can understand what I'm saying at different times. Some people hear me better one way, some people maybe a whole bunch of other different ways. Okay, so let's talk about what I mean by a human soul, just so we understand what I'm talking about. Human souls are beings that exist only in one specific place. That's it. They exist nowhere else. You can't find them anyplace else. And they exist right in the very center of the what is called the higher monastic or mental plane. That world is where they exist, right in the middle of it. If you want to be very specific, for those of you who know about that sort of stuff, it's the fourth sub-plane of the second sub-plane of the higher mental world. Okay, but the biggest concept here is they're right in the middle of things, and you might say, what are those things that they're in the middle of? And it's concepts. It's the why of life. So what does that mean? Well, tonight's show, as you know, has always been called Why Life Is, and therefore, in a way, I'm trying to be sort of a little bit of an extension of a mouthpiece of a soul as best as I can when I do this show, because that's what souls are really about. Why Life is really about their whole existence. They're fascinating. From the standpoint that they're very different than any other kind of soul. And I'm going to go through the differences in a minute, but I want to emphasize this because a lot of people don't seem, at least when I talk to them, to realize the special nature of a human soul and why it's so very different from the soul of any kind of anything else, if they believe in such things, or the souls of even beings greater than humans. Now, why would a human soul be more interesting, more complicated, maybe in some ways more even sacrificial than all these other kinds of souls? And the answer is that the human soul is the first soul that reaches rather than down to create God, down in the sense of trying to expand the mind of God in some very specific way in one and usually a couple other sub-parts of worlds, which is a great thing. I don't want to demean that. I don't want to in any way dismiss it. Or, in some cases, the souls that are more advanced than human souls are about just looking to the higher realms and being really learning to be godlike. Then what is it that human soul is so different about? Well, the human soul has to kind of meld together those two ideas into the following. It needs to be able to extend itself through us, through a creation, that's us, of a incarnated being, that's us, that is free to choose as we choose to do our life, but is still most of the time connected to us. Yet at the same time, the human soul is also aware of and thinking about connecting us as incarnates with it and God. This is unique because, let's say, the soul of an elephant. Elephants are great beings. I mean, they really are. You can think of them as one of the higher parts of the animal kingdom. The elephant can be tender, loving, can have all the emotions that we think of, good or bad, but it doesn't. Its soul doesn't concern itself with the elephant learning about its soul, nor does it concern itself about the elephant learning about God. It's just not. It's just not part of its program, and it's not equipped to do that. And I'll explain what the difference is in equipment in a little bit. But this is the point: human souls are exactly that way, though. They are built for this purpose. They are made for this purpose. And it kind of gives them this very specialness. It gives us the opportunity to smile, if you like, when we think of ourselves as connected to our soul, because this being is tremendously, we'll say, sacrificial, because it has to balance. And balance is a very big word here. That's the reason it's on the fourth sub-subpoint, for those of you who understand that meaning. It has to balance spirit and energy in ways that are perfected rather than just generalized. Other souls that are lesser don't have to balance to the level of perfection the human soul does to reach the highest level of development. They can average as a group. It's kind of a really weird thing. The group of the beings that they inhabit, they can average those things and come up with a number that allows them to even advance themselves. And we'll explain how that happens. And it's there's not this exacting, like, you got to be perfect or you're not going to really make it. Kind of thought process. It is just that important. And since souls are dealing with concepts and not forms of thought, concepts answer the question why. That's what a concept does. The soul is continuously in search of all the questions of why to all the lower realms where we live, like in the physical world, in the astral, and in lower middle. Where human beings are actually functioning. We're functioning in each incarnation. We're functioning. Our personality has to go through all this stuff. The human soul is actually attempting to find out why of everything. It doesn't need all the details. It just needs to gain the understanding, or as we would say, consciousness, of these worlds. And then it has to take that understanding and consciousness, and it has to build upon it. And as a bridge between itself and a higher being called a monad that eventually is its connection to God, it has to come up with an understanding of why all existence is. It has to solve the riddle of why life is. It further has to answer that question with the kind of authority that allows it to gain even new abilities and greater freedom and to actually give up some of its greatest sacrifices. All right, now, I'll get to the sacrifices also. But I'm going to take this as slow as I can within the time that I have so that this time when I talk about this, people will say, yeah, I think I got it this time. He went slow enough so I can figure it out. Okay, so here's the deal. Where does a human soul come from? I mean, it just doesn't suddenly appear. It certainly doesn't. It comes from the composite of seven, and I'll explain why seven different, more advanced types of animal souls. Seven more advanced types of animal souls. That's part of where it comes from. And each one of those seven types is distinctly different from the other six because it's specialized in the energy type of, we call it ray energy, of a specific kind of group of animals or a specific animal. It depends on how wide the spectrum of the animal kingdom it covered, but it's specialized in that kind of energy. Now you can say, well, I thought that animal souls get any experience with any other types of energy, etc. Rarely is that the case. And then mostly they tend to specialize in a specific kind of energy. They sometimes can inhabit a composite element, have a different, we'll say, energy bent to them under rare circumstances. I don't want that to be the definitive only answer. Mostly that's what they do, though, right? They specialize in a specific ray type of energy, and that's because they don't have the creativity available to them that the human soul has. Let me explain the difference. Because the animal soul, and this is obviously true of plant souls and mineral souls, but I'm talking about the highest of the animal souls. The highest animal souls cannot think in any creative way beyond what is called the third subplane of the higher mineral world. That's it. So the place where the human soul actually lives is beyond the grasp of thought of where animal souls live. They just don't have thought that's like a human. And what is that thought about? Why is everything the way it is? That's the thought. So you don't see animals walking around with the question of why on their heads, trying to discover the why. Can they have curiosity? Yes, the curiosity may be a proponent for them gaining food, shelter, a spouse, certain other things. But they don't have the question why, unless they are a pet, a human being. They have learned something of that nature from the human being, and it can be transferred to them under long and loving contact, hopefully. And it is possible. But generally, wild animals, forget it. No why. Okay, so the animal soul is on the third subplane, and it generally thinks not even in what is considered to be a whole part of time. It mostly thinks in the past part of time. And what does that mean? Well, it gets its experience slowly through the averages of all the animals that it ensouls, which could be millions, or it could be hundreds, it could be whatever number it has. And it then uses the information it has to come to a conceptual understanding, but it has to use the past in order to do it because it's averaging. And all these experiences are not happening at one time. They're happening over a long period of time. So there's a kind of blurring effect of the concept. Concept is never succinct. It's never definitely when this happens, that's the result. It's never, this is why something is happening. It's not really sure why something is happening. And it doesn't concern itself so much with that either. But that's part of its development. It hasn't yet developed its ability to think stronger, and I'll explain how that development takes place. Now, the interesting thing here is that there's nothing wrong with an animal soul doing this. This is called we call it all the time, instinct. Its thought is what we call instinct. It tells its species and family and subspecies, whatever kind of animals it's insulting, it says, when in this situation, do this. When in that situation, do something else. And it doesn't say why. So if you were to try, let's say we could actually communicate, and someday in the not-too-distant future we will be able to communicate with animals, when you ask them, why do they do this unusual behavior, they won't be able to tell us why. Because it comes from instinct. Instincts are complex patterns of behavior in which the being doing them is mostly unaware of the reasons for the doing. So they don't know why. They don't have the concept. And oddly, the soul doesn't either. So you wouldn't expect the animals to have it if the soul don't. And that's the problem. Yes, it's true. Humans can interrelate with animals in ways to really supplant and more or less move aside the animal soul and eventually introduce whys to animals. And some animals have an affinity for us enough so they can start asking why. They actually can. I mean, but these are pets. These are people. These are animals that are becoming people-ized by continuous contact with us. And we can't consider them the typical animal by any stretch of the imagination. So if somebody says, well, my dog knows why I do this, that dog might know. I really believe that. It's possible if they have enough of the connection. It certainly can be true. All right. Then now we see that there's seven kinds of animal souls in general. Now, in order to make a human soul, you have to get much higher levels of diversity in the energy, or we'll call it awareness of the soul. Energy is our awareness side. And much higher levels of thought, which is the spirit side. The two have to grow. Yeah. Okay, they grow. And how do you do that? How do you manage to accomplish this seemingly almost impossible feat? Well, the answer is the following. You look at your souls that are similar to each other enough in their thinking abilities, okay, spirit side, got that, and they have developed as close as they can their one awareness, which is through one of the energies that they have more or less mastered. Now remember, they could be using certain other energies on occasion, but for the most part, they're specialized in one particular kind, okay? And that's their refocus, the one that they really, really focused on, okay? And that determines how they develop as animals, and usually advanced animals. Okay, and because we're talking about advanced animals, because we're talking about how you take the souls of an advanced animal and make it into a human, a non-advanced animal cannot really become a human being. It has to develop itself and go through a lot of different changes to do that. Mostly it has to be really good at one specific ray focus and have an awful lot of good thought at its own level of instinct or preconception. Sometimes its instincts are amazingly accurate, but you wouldn't call it, by our standards, anything to write home about. But they just have amazing awareness. Okay, so you get seven of these souls together. Usually it happens at a certain time in the development of the planet, although it can happen independent of that time as well. And the seven that match the closest and that work out to be as copacetic together as possible. And remember, we're matching awareness with thought, and then you're trying to balance out seven kinds of thinking, seven kinds of energy, all kinds of stuff going on. because they've developed this based upon their prior lives. And you end up with a human soul with certain caveats. Let me explain those caveats to you. First of all, it doesn't always work. Sometimes they come together and you don't get a human soul because there's still intrinsic imbalance. And that's just more part of the problem. And the other factors are that when you put these all together, the new human has to have enough balance to be able to raise itself to the fourth subplane of the second plane, where it is in a highly balanced state of consciousness. And if it can't maintain that consciousness, it just goes to sleep, and then it falls apart. So it needs to get this balance right. And what is the balance? The balance is that it can use any one of the types of awareness that are the seven types of ray energies that it contains can give it. And it can think in any one of seven different methods of using that awareness in terms of consciousness. And if it can do that, even though one of them invariably, although there are maybe some exceptions, I don't know about this for sure, but I would assume, given enough numbers, there could be that one human soul would be so balanced that there would be no ray perfection, no ray preference, I should say. But so it does this, and it comes up with the abilities to be flexible and creative so far beyond the animal soul, because it now isn't just working through one and one, it's working through seven and seven. And as you all know, if you factorialize seven, it comes out to a huge number. Factorial means one times one times two times two times three times three times four times four times five times six times seven times seven. It's a big number. When you do that, that's how many more times the human soul is, okay? And you have to do that twice, by the way. That's how many times the human soul is that creative than the bright animal soul. Whoa, that's a big number. So if we look at any animal, no matter what animal it is, its level of creation is going to be de minimis compared to a human being. I mean, dolphins, great animals, I love them. Other kinds of whales, gorillas and orangutans, I love dogs and cats, horses. I mean, all these great animals are terrific. Creation, though, you know what? I have yet to see any one of those animals even make a moderately creative anything. All beavers can learn how to build dams by instinct, but they all do it pretty much the same way. You notice that? Not too much creativity there. I just haven't seen any of them go out and build a new bicycle, or how about something even more complicated? How about a radio? No, it's outside of their whole existence, right? We know that as a fact. We can see that. That's obvious. And the reason is that factorial issue about the 7 times 7, and it's unbelievable. Yeah. So you've got this really amazing thing going on that is a big time in terms of what the human soul has in deference to its much less developed animal soul contributors. Okay, so once you get this whole thing built up and it's all together, and I hope I'm going slow enough so you're all following me tonight, because I know I've done this something like this before, and people say, huh? What did he say? No, I'm going slow. So stay with me now. Don't give up. Okay? Because there's a lot more to tell about this whole story, all right? All right, so here we go. Okay, so we've got the very basic. It's sort of like the recipe for making something, but now we got to put it in the oven, so to speak. Okay, we got the right ingredients. We put it together, but there's still more to making a human soul than what I just said. You see, the human soul, in and of itself, is completely isolated from all other human souls, and for that matter, from all other thought, except for one or two possibilities. The most significant and the most consistent is that it's usually connected to an energy being called a human, solar angel, or sometimes inner guide, or, you know, alter ego soul. It's a being. It's an energy being that connects the human soul to gain some awareness of thought outside of itself. If it didn't have this, it would have no ability to do virtually anything. It has to have, it's like the kickstart. It has to have a spark. We'll call it that. Got to get the ignition going. And so the solar angel is connected through three parts of itself to a thing called the monad. Monad sends down the spark. The solar angel directs it and massages it towards the inclination of the soul at various points while it's getting started. And then, and once the human soul says, "Ooh, I'm awake. Yep, here I am. Whoa, okay, why? Why am I here? Why is everything?" That's what it starts doing. Then it says, "Okay, here, have another piece of myself." It gives the human soul literally a whole part of its body, the solar angel does. And says, "Here, you got to have some more awareness. You got to have senses, man. You got to have more energy." And that energy is actually a little weird because it throws the human soul kind of off, because it only has certain levels of spirit in it, and souls need to have a relative balance of spirit and energy, or they self-destruct. So they have to maintain this. So it gives this energy to the human soul, but most of it just literally contracts and becomes numb, and only a little tiny piece of it stays open. Some people call it the lotus. It stays open and keeps communicating with the solar angel, and under rare circumstances, the monad. It is possible for the monad to actually do the same thing without a solar angel, but there's no reason in most circumstances for that to happen. Under rare circumstances, it could be done with just the monad, but it would take much longer and involve a lot of potential failures. So, just so you know, I'm throwing in all the if, ands, or buts. Okay. And so, now you got the soul, you got the spark, you got one little tiny, it's called a petal, partially open. The third lowest petal of knowledge, and that's what's the first thing that the first thing that's going to answer some whys for the soul is the impartation of knowledge from the solar angel to the soul. So the soul says, "Well, I'm here, but why?" And then the solar angel explains the first 5 minutes of today's show. That's right. Now, I know, look it, I know solar angel, that's kind of a stretch, and maybe I'm wrong, okay? But somehow I believe that there's a lot of truth to what I just said. So that's what I think happens. So that's the first, you know, it's like the first 5 minutes. Boom, this is why you're here, this is how it all works, and you got to create a human being, and you're going to need to do it with a little bit of help from me and no help from virtually any other souls other than some very basic, very, very basic knowledge, because you don't have enough development to really have a lot of communication with other souls at this point. You're pretty isolated where you're at. And for a very long time, maybe a number of incarnations, you're going to be pretty much flying alone. Well, alone with my help. And the human soul says, I kind of got that. And so I'm in a sacrificial position. I'm going to wait a long time to develop myself through these incarnations called human beings. And I've got to come up with the best plan for creating a human being that I can, with what little knowledge I can get from you and from any other soul that's on a similar level with me, which we're all kind of dark in the dark about. And so we'll do the best we can. And probably our first humans are not going to be all that terrific. Got it. And the only thing we're going to get from our humans are concepts that are whole enough to reach the second subworld. at least in terms of understanding. I can grasp some of the knowledge concepts a little bit, but as far as understanding any more about my existence, that isn't going to happen until I get goodness out of the stuff that's sent to me. If I have a wretched incarnate, it's going to send me a bunch of garbage, and most of the garbage is just going to bounce off, and it's like a non-life. It didn't even almost happen. Except there's karma from it, and I'll feel the karma, I'll see the karma, and I'll know problems, even though I won't know the events. Got it. And I won't remember anything unless 60% of the time one of my human beings happens to be virtuous for a lifetime. 60%, like, huge number. Huge number. I mean, we all think we're terrific people, but being virtuous 60% of the time, you can. Most people are selfish far more than 60% of the time. Far more. Okay. Anyway, so that's going to be the beginning deal. And the soul buys into it. By the way, the soul has to meet the agreement with the solar angel, and you could say with the monad. Nothing proceeds unless the soul agrees. And I know that sounds hard to believe. Oh, wait a second. Wait, the soul is controlling what the monad is going to do? Well, yeah, in a way, yes. It has to be a chosen vocation, whatever you want to call it, the chosen script of its existence. It knows it's going to have a terrible bunch of lifetimes in the beginning. It knows there's a lot of messing up things. It knows it's going to be lonely and sometimes not even barely conscious, but it accepts this because it wants to answer the question, why, about everything. It wants to know its creator. It wants to know itself. It wants to know all of creation. And it wants to know why life is. That's a fact. That's what gets it going. So we could say the motivating factor is the big why. Okay? And so this is how it all happens. And it's kind of exciting in a way, because if we were to watch it as a script of a movie, I mean, this could be a pretty interesting, you know, kind of a scenario. Maybe more animation would do better than making it with actors. But still, it could be a pretty cool thing. And the idea here is that the soul is free. It's just as free as the incarnations it creates as human beings are to make the choices that it chooses to about what it's going to do. And that's one of the things it needs to answer the question of why about. The very first question it has to answer is, why am I free? Because it's given the freedom, then that question must be answered, right? And that's a big question. When you can answer that question, you've really made a step towards God. It makes a lot of sense. So this is now, there's no hidden agenda about this. It's really, in a way, it's right there. Of course, the soul may not realize it immediately, but soon it would come to that realization. Yeah, why am I free must be part of what God's about. God must want freedom for some reason. What does freedom do? Okay, so you see how that all works out. The soul also then is better at creating, as it answers more of these why questions, creating more adept human beings that can carry through a methodology of creation in the lower three worlds, where the soul cannot travel to because its senses are absent 100%. It has no senses in those worlds. It can't exist in worlds that it doesn't have any sense in. And it can't make senses to exist in those worlds because it would become terribly illusioned and contaminated by the energies and become just like us. So that wouldn't do it any good at all, because then it would just be, it's sort of really like suicide. So the incarnation, us, the pilgrim on the journey, is absolutely necessary in the process. And the soul knows there's going to be hundreds of incarnations, if not more, and that this is a long process by some standards. I don't know that to it the time is as relative as it is to us, because from our perspective, we have a very distorted view of time due to the fact that presently we're living in the most ridiculously short period of time here in the physical world. And it changes as we live in other dimensions, and so our perspective changes more like the soul, and then we don't have this very narrow nonetheless, the soul has a different viewpoint because time is less separated from space in the fourth sub-subplane of the second sub-world of the higher mental world. Far less separated. So it has a huge amount more time. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more years more time than we've got here. So, I mean, just a vastly different kind of life to it. And that's a good thing, because it needs the time, especially in the beginning, to try to get things as good as it can before it creates us. All right. So, eventually, the soul does get better. I mean, a few dozen lifetimes, human beings start getting better that it creates. Not all of them are disasters. Sometimes it gets more fortune. And, you know, there are some souls that do better than others. It's just nature of everything. There's no such thing as a single equality of all things, because then there would be no creation. So in order to have creation, there's a great differentiation from one thing to the next. That's just the way it is in all of existence, unless you're a socialist. You know, you don't believe in it. So, okay, but the point is, you know, so the here in this process, the soul is learning another why, learning about this business of synthesis and creation. It's involved in so many lessons, huge lessons, that it's going through, and every time it learns a lesson, it can expand its knowledge petals more. Every time it becomes more willing to give, it expands a thing called the love petal more, and there's three different kinds of those. And every time it makes willing to make even greater sacrifices in regards to some other souls that it has more and more contact with, and also for other reasons as well, the sacrifice aspects of its senses develop. These are petals that originally came, again, from the solar angel. Now, I want to mention something here, that the soul itself intrinsically had three, we'll call them inner petals, that came from its initial sacrifice to even exist. Once the spark is given to it to exist, it develops these petals for itself. And these inner sacrifice petals kind of protect it and give it a proclivity towards one of the three parts of God's mind. And at the same time, they act as a unique quality of itself, right from the beginning. So every soul contains the uniqueness of its own balance from its very beginning of its existence. Just amazing. So I want to throw that in there. Not to confuse you, because we still have all the stuff that's given by the solar angel. But this is actually created somewhat from the solar angel, but it isn't like given. It's like instantly created. And it's an amazing thing when it is. Okay, so I think we will take a break right now, as we usually do. And when I come back, I'll try to complete this hour or so, and then we'll have our encore presentation. So we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a kind of two-hour show that is both live and an encore. The remainder of this hour will be spent on the live part. That's me right now. And the second part will be on a positive spiritual future and how we get there, which was last year's January 1st, 2010 show. So if you missed that show, or even if you heard it, it might be good to listen to again. And this gives everybody an opportunity to hear a really upbeat, I hope, show on the future, even though I know the next year may be one of the hardest in recent times. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be positive about our future. Okay, so let me continue on with the life of the human soul. And get into some more of the, we'll call it the intricate elements of being a soul. All right, so the human soul has this, the three parts, three petals that are covering it up, sometimes called inner sacrifice or inner domains or whatever. And these are really created by its own unique balance being blended with the energy of its monad that comes through the solar angel, or directly from the monad in rare circumstances, and that just creates this element to the soul. It's what makes it basically a unique being. So we still have what a lot of people call the spark of God, or however you want to call it, involved in the progenesis of life in some way. And it's always the three parts of God's mind involved. Now, one of the three parts is more dominant than the other two, and so that's a common element to these three petals. And it also has to do with usually how they open, although there are exceptions to that rule as well. And they open at the end of the soul's life, not at its beginning. Now, what does this mean? Why did they cover up the full extent of the soul if the soul is really there to get as much concept as possible? And the answer is there's so much, we'll say, untruth in the mental world that the soul can become overcome by some of the untruth that it may encounter, even in concepts. And to protect it from some damage of this, these petals kind of filter out things that don't seem to have completeness or wisdom involved in them. And for this reason, in some religions, these three inner sacrifice petals are sometimes called the petals of wisdom. Now, why are they called that? Well, because they prevent most untruths from contaminating the nature of the soul itself. Therefore, the soul by nature is wise, you see. But, yes, it does retard the growth of the soul because they inhibit the development to some extent, as well as, you know, protect it. But this was figured figured out long ago, and it seems to be a system that works pretty good. So that's why you got these three inner sacrifice petals, or petals of wisdom, for those of you following certain religious views. And then you've got the outer petals, which come from the solar angel, and that's used to communicate with the personality and the angel and eventually the monad and all of them together and the human being, and eventually they all get involved in it. But you got to develop that by developing virtue, creating light. The connections of all these different parts comes from light and cannot be developed through any other means. That's it. Now, I know there's people say, well, what about evil? Evil can still think, you know. Evil cannot think much above where the brightest animals can, other than borrowing thought from others who have already thought something. So they can use that. They seldom are creative. Now, when they are creative in concepts, the concepts are almost exclusively from the third subworld of the mental world, which is still animalistic in a sense. They're kind of a cross between an animal soul and a human soul. It's really hard to even describe them. And they oftentimes, most of the time, are disconnected from their soul. So they're soulless, and they have a kind of like animal soul that connects to them called a cosmic evil group soul. And this evil group soul is a mixture between what we would think of as a human soul and mostly as an animal soul. They're more animalistic than human, but they have some human things they can do, and they sometimes, when they get very evil, can actually create. But it's tough for them to do that, and it costs them a lot of power, and that's what they live by. Now, they are strictly on the third part of God's mind's tray of... Okay. Now, so, they use their will and power to execute, but the power is what keeps them alive. Now, back to our story of the soul. All right. So the human soul starts doing its thing, making new incarnations, and each incarnation starts to unfold some of its outer petals, and maybe it gives a little zing to an inner petal here and there, on occasion, not much. And as it's doing this, it starts to become aware of all the other souls that are just like it, and become aware in more than just the knowledge they have, which it could always do a little bit. It could get a little knowledge from someplace it didn't exactly know where. Now it actually knows what their understandings are. So it starts to share understanding with other souls. When does that happen? Oh, it's very hard to say. It could happen in a dozen lifetimes. It could happen in 100 lifetimes. It really depends on the soul and the type of incarnations it has had. The faster this happens, the more joy the soul experiences, because it really wants to have this connection with other souls, because, I mean, lonely being a soul in the beginning, a huge sacrifice. We're talking about for thousands of years, a big sacrifice. So this is a joyful period for the soul, a terrific, wonderful time in the soul's existence to be developing these connections. First, it's with a few on a conscious level. Not knowledge level, but a consciousness level. And eventually, it's with vast numbers, hundreds, on not only a conscious level, but eventually on a sacrifice level, where they make common decisions together to sacrifice certain things. They make common decisions to give up something of one of their incarnations for the betterment of some other soul's incarnation. That builds the sacrifice part of them. I mean, just amazing things start to happen. And the soul starts doing virtual reality. And what is a virtual reality? Well, you've heard this from me before. They are building different personalities and projecting them into the future sense of time. They can actually do this, really. And they actually experience some of the interaction. They don't experience all of the bad things. They get filtered out and stuff. But they experience some of the interactions, some of the failures, but most of the successes of the interactions between literally hundreds of people that are going to incarnate around the same time together, and eventually will have, they think, will have contact with each other. There's no knowing for sure that what they're doing is absolutely going to occur. But it's a fantastic idea, and it really works. They have so many scenarios that they play out in the time that we are alive, it's a huge amount, that they are able to create great improvements in each lifetime, even though we may be screwing up royally while we're alive as incarnates. And the joy the soul experiences in these virtual realities is hard to even understand because they're experiencing all three parts of time, past, present, and future, at one time. They are living some incredible kind of life that we can't even fully understand. It's hard for us to understand living out so many lifetimes with others that are so compassionate, loving, sacrificial, knowledgeable, so inventive, creative, all at the same time. Amazing. And remember, they don't necessarily have to follow any particular doctrine, procedure, anything. They're free agents. They really are. The Solar Angel makes suggestions on occasion, but basically, you know what? It stays pretty much out of the process unless the soul says, hey, need a little help over here. Can you help me out with this problem? And sometimes it will give a little help. That's how it works. And this is the beauty of being a soul. Now, could we live that way here or anywhere? This is going to shock you. Yes, it's actually possible, but we're too selfish and too illusioned to do it. So, yeah, we could do it, but we literally reject it and choose not to do it. We reject it because of illusion, and we are too self-focused, fearful, and other issues dealing with our personality to really deal with. Their personality is so much more interested in material things than in consciousness. It's just the nature of itself. Okay, so eventually the human soul does develop into a really great being. And in the process, some people say 777 lifetimes. You know what? It could be 600, it could be 900. These number things are silly. There's a lot of variability. But the point is, the soul eventually becomes able to leave the fourth sub-subplane of the second subplane of the mental world, which is like a little tiny, tiny, tiny part of the universe, and actually work from the next whole dimension of time and space called the intuitional or Buddhic plane. And when it does, it goes to the whole fourth subplane of the Buddhic plane and actually can reach all parts of the Buddhic plane at times. It becomes a liberated soul, whereas we have a non-liberated soul. Now, how does it liberate itself? Well, it does this in a kind of a process that's called initiations, and it gets some help by opening the petals that it needs to open. The inner sacrifice or wisdom petals have to be opened up. It has to develop this great wisdom all of a sudden. Kind of a big spurt. And it does it in concert with the monad, through the solar angel usually, but sometimes directly with the monad at the initiation stage. And so it's actually getting, boom, like big shock, and it changes. Most of the time these days, these happen in the mental world after a person has already died from the physical world. Someday in a not too distant future, it can start happening again, as it has in some past times, in the physical world. Right now, it's not supposed to be happening here, so it doesn't seem to be happening. But at any rate, the important part of this is that the soul is actually growing itself into freedom. And when it liberates itself, it does so by giving a part of its senses to a whole bunch of new human souls. Or not new, I should say, but to other human souls that are somewhat behind it, but have been taught by it in some way through its incarnates. And it also liberates itself by freeing itself from the need to be in a perfect state of balance. It has achieved the perfection of balance And now it moves on to some new part of existence. And you say, well, if you're perfect, why would you want to move on to a new part of existence? That doesn't make any sense. Well, perfection is not godly. Perfection would be the end of everything. God is eternal growth. Therefore, there can never be perfection. Perfection is illusion. And when the soul realizes this, you can say, well, how could it not realize it when you just said it over the radio? Well, I don't know. Maybe it's not listening. But what it does realize, that perfection is not its goal, but rather liberation and allowing others to find their own answer to the question of perfection in their own way is the answer. And also, therefore, not seeking anyone or anything to be perfect, including their students, and also having, therefore, compassion for all of humanity, and also having forgiveness, I'm learning that one, for the most evil and vile of humanity at a particular time. All of this has to come through this single idea of giving up the concept of being perfect, which the soul is kind of saddled with in the beginning of its existence. It's sort of like it's given these chains so it can break free of them, and it has to do so through its own power and its own thought, not through the solar angel, not even through the monad. It has to use its own will, its own consciousness, and its own senses to do this. And once it does, it then moves almost instantly to become a liberated soul in the Buddhic world. It becomes a different member of a different kingdom, a member of the kingdom of souls. Some people call them masters of the ageless wisdom. Some people call them the great ones. Who cares? They're just beings beyond humans, superhumans, whatever you want to call them. They're beings that are not your next-door neighbor, guaranteed. And no, they don't sell tickets, and you can't go listen to them and tell you that they're a master. Okay, so the point is that this whole scenario, this whole story, is a lot more than what I've explained so far, but my time is up. Actually, I'm robbing a few minutes here from the next show. And it gives us some understanding of how come the life of the soul, the human soul, is so different than the life of any other kind of soul ever. And it's unique, and it's wonderful, and can be incredibly joyous. And until next year, live, this has been Niles McClellan for Why Life Is.